After a summer hiatus, Mondays with Miles is back on the airwaves. I'm extremely excited to once again be here with NCAA President Miles Brand to discuss the pressing issues in intercollegiate athletics. It's been a busy summer, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Well, we certainly have a lot of things to discuss, and I'm looking forward to getting started. In our last conversation before summer break, Dr. Brand asked for AA's own readers and podcast listeners to send in questions and directly communicate with him. A few weeks ago, Orson Swindle from Every Day Should Be Saturday submitted 5 questions he wanted answered. So we're going to ask them right now. The first one, why go after the University of North Dakota for their mascot name? What purpose does this serve? Aren't there more important things for the NCAA to pursue?
Well, I have to be careful with my answer, Josh, because there's a potential lawsuit, and the University of North Dakota has told us that they are considering filing a lawsuit. But the same principles that we went into this with when we examined all the institutions with Native American images and symbols applies in this case. Namely, the NCAA takes very seriously its responsibility to show respect for all, and that includes all ethnic minority groups in the United States and Native Americans as well. And so respect for all leads us in some cases to take a position against the Confederate flag, in other cases takes a position with respect to Native American symbols and logos. If this doesn't concern the institutional autonomy of University of North Dakota or any other institution. They are free to use any symbols or mascots they feel appropriate in their own context. But in our games, the championship games, we should be able to control what happens in our games. And if they want to play in our games, they'll have to play by our rules.
Well, I think that about answers question number one. Question number two, will the NCAA ever seriously sanction a major program again?
Well, actually, most of the sanctions, the major sanctions doled out by the Committee on Infractions, concerns Division I, and that includes major programs as well. In fact, if you look at the numbers over the last decade or even longer, it's been pretty constant, a certain number each year. So I don't think there's been any change in that. But I have noticed a really interesting trend, a very productive trend, namely there's an effort by many universities to self-police. They will sanction themselves, as it were, and hope that the NCAA sanctions are about the same. But the key point here is that they are self-policing, and that's productive. One recent case is the University of Oklahoma, in which they decided to remove the scholarships of 2 key football players. I give the president and Coach Stoop and others a lot of credit there for taking the initiative. It may have even cost them a high standing in the BCS. Potentially, I don't know the answer to this, but potentially even a shot at the national championship. But they stood up and did that. Now, it doesn't follow that the NCAA Committee on Infractions won't provide further sanctions to them. But the key is that they did stand up and were counted, and good for them.
And it's important to remember that the Committee on Infractions is made up of the membership.
It's a membership committee. The staff does the investigation, and we have trained professionals experienced in law enforcement and other areas that do the investigations. And they give that information to our Committee on Infractions, which consists of sitting judges, people in the law school, deans of law school, for example, as well as commissioners and others who are knowledgeable about both the law and also the rules of the NCAA.
The third question we have from Orson Swindle is, does the APR mean anything when only the smallest, least financially significant schools fail to make the grade?
You know, it's true that at least at this stage, we're seeing most of the penalties not in Division 1A or at least not in the 6 equity conferences. And the reason for that is that it costs money to do a good job academically. And some of the institutions have not yet understood in depth what it takes to comply with our new academic rules. And so they haven't been providing the student athletes with the kind of academic advising, computers, whatever it is necessary to do it. So it is in part a money issue. I think for those smaller schools, they are going to have to invest in academic performance. Now, all this could change when we move away from taking into account the small reference class size, when we take into account the in the next year or two, we'll be looking at numbers, for example, in basketball, that may produce more sanctions, more loss of scholarships from APR low scores than we see right now. I hope that doesn't happen, that the schools and the student-athletes themselves rise to the occasion, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see more sanctions.
So the change in behavior that's come from some of the larger schools may be a direct result of greater resources at this point?
Greater resources and greater awareness that academic issues are critical, greater awareness on the part of the athletic director and the president. It takes a little time, I think, to get it through the entire association, but that will happen over time.
Okay. Question number four. Explain the logic about allowing athletes such as Tom Spikowski from Notre Dame to box professionally while stripping Drew Tate of the money he could have earned in a pro-am golf tournament for making a hole-in-one.
This is an interesting question because the answer isn't very clear, might even be subtle, but there is an important principle here. The principle is you're not supposed to use your participation in one intercollegiate athletic sport to create financial opportunities for yourself. And so, for example, in the case of the Notre Dame player, he took no endorsement money. It may have been offered to him, but he took no endorsement money. It was like he had a summer job, whether it was a lifeguard or some other summer job. But he had to work at it, and a pretty rough summer job in this case. But
no kidding.
He had to work at it. I don't believe he'll have that summer job during the year. I think he'll be playing football. But in the case of Tate at Iowa, it's a little different. He was playing in a golf tournament, lucky enough to have a hole-in-one, playing in a golf tournament solely because he was a football player. He was chosen for that reason. So if you were an English major at Iowa, you would not have been able to play in that tournament. If you were an English major at Notre Dame, you might have been able to go to Madison Square Garden box if you're good enough.
Right.
But if you're an English major at Iowa, you couldn't because I don't want to English majors, by the way. But assuming an English major who's not an athlete, some are, I think in that case, in the Tate case, was only because he was an athlete that he was allowed to play, and that resulted in the hole-in-one.
The fifth and final question, can you explain to the average football fan what it is your organization does exactly? It's something many, including us, are not exactly clear on.
With respect to football, you know, we do everything in football except one thing, and that is the Division 1A bowl games. Now, Division 1A is only a football designation, not an entire divisional designation, and that group, the 1A group, plays in bowl games. And those are run by third parties, often associated with cities like Pasadena for the Rose Bowl, for example. And they coordinate with the BCS Bowl Championship Series in that case, and other bowls coordinate with other directly with conferences. But we are not involved in 1A football. We do everything else. We run championships for 1AA football, championships in Division II and Division III. The NCAA, in no case, for football and other sports, deals with regular season events. We are only dealing with championship events. That's all we do. And in football, there's one exception, and namely, that's the 1A bowl games.
And I would assume that the average football fan isn't aware of the football rules committees and who sets the rules for each of the divisions.
Right. I think we have rules committees made up of members that set the rules for all divisions, even 1A football. So the rules, issues, and so on, we organize, although the members make those decisions. But in terms of event organization, control, putting on the events, as we do for the men's Final Four in basketball, we don't do that in the 1A football. That is the sole exception.
Okay. And I would also encourage anyone who's interested to learn more about the association to hop on the AA Zone and listen to our Faces of the NCAA feature, where you can meet a different NCAA staff member every week, or read Coach's Corner, where coaches from different institutions are stopping by and sharing their perspectives. And, of course, we always have the student-athlete voice well represented on the blog. Thank you, Dr. Brand. It's good to see you again. I'd also like to thank Orson Swindle for submitting these five questions, and want to encourage all of our listeners to send in their questions for Miles Brand. I'm glad we're back, and I look forward to doing it again next week. We'll see you then.